Speak up.
Well, put it.
Is it on yet?
Yeah, it's on.
I didn't know that. This is September 3rd, 1992. Ruth Adelson and Virginia Vatz are conducting an update interview with Frieda Shapiro. Respondent was last interviewed in 1979, and many changes have occurred during the last 15 years in her personal life as well as her community activities. Frieda, we have noted that you're still living at the same address. Will you begin by telling us about your family structure, where they're living, your children, grandchildren, and so on, and talk about your interaction with them.
No, wait. Go ahead.
Well, there's a picture right there taken on my 75th birthday with all my children and grandchildren. There are four children, each of them married, and each has three children. So that makes a total of 12. And they're all, of course, great kids. The oldest grandchild is 23, and the youngest is 6. The grandchildren are very good friends with each other, enjoy being together. Three of the families live in Pittsburgh, very close to me. And the fourth one lives in Los Angeles. That's Ralph. But he comes back on a regular basis, and we go to California, either me alone or the brothers separately, so that we're in close contact. Stop it.
You're not supposed to stop. Just keep going.
What was the rest of the question? I've stayed in the same house.
Are they, at this point, could you give us a description of what your children are doing? Are they what kinds of businesses or professions, or what are they doing at this point?
Well, David, my oldest, has become very active in both the Jewish and the general community, and has followed his father's footsteps in some respects, in that Saul was once the president of the United Jewish Federation, and David just completed his term as president of the United Jewish Federation. And Saul was president of our National Cooperative Buying Association for Giant Eagle Markets, and David also has completed a term as president. In each case, I'm not sure there's been another father-son occurrence. David is the president of Giant Eagle Markets. Danny is an attorney with his own law firm, Marcus and Shapiro. Ralph is an attorney with O'Melveny and Myers. That's O apostrophe M-E-L-V-A-N-Y and capital M-E-Y-E-R-S, in Los Angeles. He's a partner. It's a very large law firm, and he has a very interesting practice. His wife is also an attorney, but practices part-time because of her need to be with the children more. Danny's wife went back to social work school at Pitt and became a graduate social worker, and is now doing some private counseling, and is also at the Jewish Family and Children's Service one day a week. Karen, David's wife, never went to work, but has become very active in the Jewish community. She's as active as I am, and in the non-Jewish community. She enjoys it very much. She's very conscientious about any obligation she undertakes. And the children, David has two college graduates, and his third son is just going to start to college. Danny has one child in college and a second child about to start. Ralph's oldest child is just 13, so they're still in elementary school. And Edie's oldest child is 11. Edie is a doctor, and after she had her first year of internship, she stayed home for 5 years to have three children very close together. The moment they're 9, 10, and 11. And when the youngest was 4 in preschool, she went back to finish her internship, her residency, and became a psychiatrist. And is in private practice. She's, I think it's almost a year that she's in private practice. But she takes 2 days a week off to be with the children. She enjoys her work, loves her work, but she also is a very good mother and spends a lot of time with the children.
That's very interesting. Do you see your children regularly?
Oh, yeah,
they
yeah.
have such busy lives. I was
well,
wondering
we all have busy lives. I had Friday night dinner with Edie's family. Edie has wanted to keep up that Shabbat tradition with, as we knew it, with my parents, and so I go there Friday nights for dinner. But we have our place in the country, which we've had for over 40 years, and the children were little when we went there. Edie was born after, a year after we bought the place, and so they've grown up living on weekends and many summer vacations, a very rustic, simple, hard-working life, because we cleared a lot of grown-over, abandoned farmland. We planted 5,000 trees. We got to know a lot about whatever animals and snakes and frogs and toads were living with us out there. And we had a big vegetable garden, and the kids all learned to drive a tractor before they could drive a car.
Oh, that sounds wonderful, particularly the fact that the family goes there to spend time together in such a
Saul and I never
wholesome way.
We never learned to play golf, and we never joined a country club because we thought this was the way we wanted to spend our weekends. And we just loved it. It was a just total change from city life 5 days a week. It was very important to Saul to be able to unwind out there. He became a very good wood chopper. It was all physical work. And we continue that to this day.
I think I finished what you asked me. Just to refresh our memory, Frieda, where is your house in the country? Near Ligonier.
It's 10 miles north of Ligonier in a neighborhood that is not at all developed. It's the same old farmhouses that have been there for 150 years in a 10-mile stretch of road, which we take from Route 30 to our place. I can count there are probably 10 new houses, and it has changed that little.
Are most of your former neighbors that you interacted with still there?
Well, we only have three neighbors, and they're a half a mile away. We are totally isolated, and for the first 20 years, we lived there without a phone. And
oh,
it wasn't until the first year was without running water and an outside toilet. And
pardon me, did you say your parents occupied that house?
No. Saul and I bought it. We named it for my parents because they gave us the down payment to pay for it, and which we later returned. But it's named Jodora Woods. My father was Joe, mother Dora. And they used to come out Sundays to visit.
Is that J-O-D-O-R-A?
Woods. It's, we have a lot of acreage. 600 and some acres now, because originally we bought a smaller bit, but as property became available and connected to us, we added. It's all woods. We had the first house was a little three-room house, one bedroom for Saul and me and one for the three boys. It just had three beds and it looked just like the pictures of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. I designed the house, which was, I assure you, very simple. But
what do you do there now?
Oh, we work all the time. We work in the garden.
Do you cook and so on?
I cook very, very skimpily. And now that the two children, David's family and Danny's family, come often, but those girls are good cooks and they have the children, I'm usually invited to one or the other. Or I join them but bring my own leftovers from home. One of them makes a grill, and in the summer we can eat our own corn if we have a good crop. We have our own raspberries, our own fresh vegetables.
Sounds like a very rewarding type of...
It's very relaxed. We have very little company.
Yeah.
It's not a social. Our neighbors are good neighbors in that one of them now helps us because it's got David so busy that he can't do all the work, and he comes regularly and looks after, makes sure everything is all right. The other neighbor, if he needs to borrow a tractor or machine, that's fine, and he will clear the road for us if necessary.
That's wonderful.
That's it. No social events.
And you go there
Friday
on
night
weekends,
Saturday
when you
morning.
Feel like it, no regular...
If we can avoid any social things in Pittsburgh, we go there. When we have to stay here for something like a bar mitzvah or a wedding or something, then we...
Otherwise, most of the family spends time
at the farm. Edie doesn't go as much. Well, they're all, we're flexible. It isn't regular. And now that Saul is gone, I can't go overnight unless one of the boys is there overnight. I could not stay there alone.
Yeah.
After the first 20 years, when the kids, two of the boys were married and had children, we built a second house and gave the first three-room house to David. And we built one with four bedrooms. And that lasted until we had all the grandchildren, and then Danny, we have a third house now.
Sounds like a wonderful, wholesome, productive way of living.
Now, these are very simple houses. They're not city houses, but we have telephones in them. And
I have to have a living room and a dining room, just an eating area.
It's the front room is living room and dining room.
Right.
It's good, strenuous physical work, and I love it, and so do they.
That must be a very contented way of spending your time. Tell me, your activities in the community, professional or volunteer, are you still active in the same organizations, or let's talk a little bit about which ones you're active in or have been active in?
Well, we last met in 1979, and shortly after that, Saul got sick with a diagnosis of cancer and was told he had a year to live. And that's exactly the way it was. And during that year, there were periods when he was well enough to go to work, and during that period, I went to whatever meetings were on my schedule, but whenever he was home, I was home, and I basically dropped out of everything until he died in August 1981. And it was a very deep loss for all of us. And the children, we all had a close relationship with each other all along. During that year, it became even closer because the boys and Ralph came from California. The boys were here almost every night, and Ralph came from California every other week to be here a few days. And it was a very close, warm time, I must say, with everything bad there.
There's nothing like having a supportive family.
It was just totally supportive. And and it just made Saul and me feel very good. And when he died, you know, I didn't know how I was going to handle it. But a few months afterwards, I got a call from the American Jewish Committee asking me to be chairman. And I said, you know, I've been a member of the American Jewish Committee for many years, and I'd served on one of those committees which choose a high school student who gets honored for being very helpful in human relations,
yes,
in the school. It's a really very nice award given to a high school student. And I'd been on that many years before, but otherwise had not been active. And I said, you know, how can you bring me in out of the blue? And they said they had a rather unique structure. There was a president who had the mainline responsibilities, but they, and a few other chapters across the country, had in addition a chairman who served as a liaison between other groups in the city, and they wanted me to fill that function. So I said yes, and it turned out to be a wonderful thing for me because it brought me right back into the many contacts I'd had throughout the city, and the American Jewish Committee does wonderful things, and I don't know that you want me to take time on this tape to describe its program, but it was one very much, very complementary to the kinds of things the Council of Jewish Women does, in that it does advocate for social reform for everybody, and is very concerned about relationships between various Jewish groups and Jews and other groups in the community. And community relationships and group relationships are something I'm just interested in. I enjoy the process. I enjoy meeting various kinds of people.
Does that include things like the Conference of Christians and
Jews?
Yes,
it does. And I did go on that board separately. But this morning I was at a meeting called the Christian-Jewish Dialogue Group, basically a clergy dialogue group, in which there are rabbis and ministers from various denominations and a few lay people. This morning there were 23 present. And that group was formed by the American Jewish Committee in 1982 when Israel invaded Lebanon, and we were very concerned about the repercussions this would have on the Christian groups in the city who were critical of Israel. And so that group was started to interpret Israel's needs, and particularly its security needs, to basically a community that did not understand these needs. And we felt that there was much greater understanding as a result. And we've had lectures from various members of the clergy on the origins of anti-Semitism. Barbara Burston and George, who was a chair of the American Jewish Committee and an expert in Holocaust history, is a co-chair along with George Werner, who is the dean of the Trinity Episcopal Church downtown. And we just had a wonderful interchange. This morning we had a black minister from the Presbyterian Theological Seminary who was discussing reactions of the African American community to the Rodney King trial and the beating and the uprising which occurred in Los Angeles. It was just a very good discussion. Rabbi Jacob was there, Rabbi Gibson was there, along with various members of the clergy, and particularly some young seminary students, because as we explained, we particularly want those young ministers who are going to go out into the community and who need to have this background about relationships with Jews.
Definitely. I think that's wonderful, and I think it's something that a lot of people in the Jewish community are not apprised of particularly.
I know, and this is, we don't you know, we don't do anything which reaches the news or is noticeable as a physical activity. But the fact is that there is a lot of understanding and growth on the part of the members who come. And there's been a revolving group, but which does go back. George Werner said that he changed the kind of service he gave at Easter after understanding where we felt hurt by what was in the service.
That has very significant impact on how the community interacts with all together. I think that's wonderful.
And the American Jewish Committee has a Polish Jewish group, a Black Jewish group, and we started a Chinese Jewish group. There are some Chinese in Pittsburgh, actually the National Chinese Group President in Pittsburgh.
Tell me about the various groups, the Black Jewish group. How many persons are involved in that
15,
kind of a
15,
group?
20,
is that right?
And mixed. And that Jewish group has merged since with a similar one started by CRC of the United Jewish Federation. We're now a single group because there were two for a while. And we've had some very excellent meetings. And the CRC group started when...
Pardon me, what is...
Community Relations Committee of the United Jewish Federation. It's Community Relations, which is what is AJC's strength, as well as that committee on the UJF.
Do these people belong, the Black Jewish group, for instance, do they have their own congregation, or do they intersperse among various Jewish organizations, or how do they meet?
Well, the CRC is actually composed of members. That's a Jewish group under the UJF. The Jewish part of it is representatives from Jewish organizations throughout the city. The African Americans come who have been recognized as people who have a leadership position in their community and who are interested in this kind of thing. It started when Farrakhan came to Pitt. If you remember the big concern,
yes, I remember
his lecture. And the head of the Black Action Studies at Pitt, which brought him, became a member of that group. And he brought several students with him. And they had no understanding of how we saw Farrakhan, and they saw him in a totally different way. Because they knew the things he had said against Jews, but they were willing to put that aside because they said, he also says some very good things for blacks, such as you got to get up and work. You have to stop using drugs.
Right.
And he had a message for them that was very positive. So that they, these people who themselves were not anti-Semitic, didn't see that as very important to us because there were other things being said that was very important to them. But they did understand how we saw it and how we could not.
They gained some insight.
They gained a lot of insight. And we gained insight into them because at that time some of the black leaders said, Farrakhan is a fringe of the black community. He doesn't represent us at all. Now, we know that the students in colleges, the black students, are the ones who are generating, and some black professors are generating a lot of the anti-Semitism. Stop a minute. Well, this kind, so I became very interested in the activities of the American Jewish Committee. That brought me back at once into the whole mainstream of what's going on in this whole community. Go ahead.
One question before you continue with this, which is very interesting. Take a group of 15 black Jews in the community. Do they connect with a synagogue or what do they? I'm not clear on that.
I don't know, not in any formal way. They do not give a report back at their synagogue or whatever their Jewish organization was. The fact, And the blacks do not, in an organized way, go back and announce to their church or to their fraternity, this is what we learned at the last time. There's no such formal going back.
Well,
they are leaders.
Black Protestants have...
The hope, Jenny, is that it will modify people's attitudes on both sides so that when they're in their ordinary social groups, they can interpret the other point of view. Now, there are many Jewish groups who have wanted to turn inward. They've been disgusted with the constant recurrence of anti-Semitic incidents. They feel, why bother with the rest? Let's just pay attention to ourselves, to our Jewish values, to our Jewish family, and our Jewish temples and synagogues. But I feel that that's very important, but I spend half my time in the non-Jewish world because I think that our interrelationship is extremely important.
I agree 100%.
These blacks and Chinese are not Jewish.
No.
You see what I'm
trying to say? Black Jews.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. I misunderstood. Yeah, right. I thought they were black Jews.
They're Baptist, whatever.
African-Americans.
They're African Americans with Jews. They're Chinese people with Jews. They're,
I thought they were.
All of a sudden, it occurred to me you had a difference.
All right, that didn't occur.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got it.
Okay. I don't think that anybody else listening would get that interpretation that Jenny has.
Yeah, we got it.
No, the Chinese are Chinese, and they have been discriminated against. And one of the interesting things they said was, you know, everybody thinks all the Chinese are smart. Brilliant, you know, they're getting the best grades and everything. We're not all that way. we're divided up just like everybody else.
Precisely.
Well, you know, the general perception is now if you get an Asian student in the class, they're going to be the valedictorian, as is happening all over this country.
Right.
But it's not everybody.
Right. Yeah, people generalize,
right.
You know, from
right.
things they've read in the media right. and so on. That's true.
Incidentally, I have a Chinese daughter-in-law. Ralph is married to a Chinese.
Yeah, I read about it.
And she—I don't know if I said this before—but she said that the Chinese were very sensitive to the fact that they would be discriminated against, and many of them, and I believe Indians also, go into measurable professional fields, science or medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Or engineering, where their work is measurable and
mm-hmm.
is not dependent on the bias of someone looking at them. She chose to go into law, which her father felt was not a wise thing to do, but she's actually was very successful, and in California has certainly not met, on the contrary, people have reached out to her rather than closing her out.
Is that right? That's... very, very interesting. Let's touch a little bit about your religious attitudes and activities, which seem to play a rather significant part in many people's lives. Are you religiously oriented or have strong religious convictions? Do you have a lot of ritual participation? Let's hear a little about that.
Shortly after I went onto the American Jewish Committee board, Temple Sinai invited me to be on their board. And that was the first time I had ever been on that end of a religious institution. We had always gone to high holiday services and some Friday night services, but I'd never been involved in the organizational aspect of a temple. I found it to be very interesting, and I think as the years...
What would be the date?
It was, I think, 1982. A lot of things happened at once to me.
Okay.
People were, they were filling a void for me, and I think the people who were asking me to join things recognized that I might have a void, that I might have time to do these things. And so very quickly I became involved, along with the temple, the United Jewish Federation, and I have a whole list of things to which I belonged. And I want to get, after the religious part, I'll come back to some of these, because they've been a crucial part of my life ever since Saul died. And have filled my life in a way that I certainly didn't anticipate, but has made life very good for me in spite of the loss in my personal home. I think that I was raised as a conservative Jew in my father's mother's home, and we became Reform Jews and joined Temple Sinai for our children to be bar mitzvah there. And I never thought of myself as very religious in terms of services, prayer, but we always observed the Jewish holidays. And as I have gone on with all these groups, hearing people express their religious ideas in these various interreligious groups, I have defined my own, and I find there's considerable more spiritual and religious feeling than I would have described myself as having at an earlier period in my life. I really love the Jewish religion. Certainly, I find it far more